Well, hello and welcome to the ADA Shop Talk podcast. I'm your host, Paul Klein. And if you are an ADA coordinator, government official, architect, or accessibility specialist trying to better understand the ADA, then you, my friend, are in the right place. So glad that you're here. Hey, just remember, new show every Wednesday. I hope you can tune in and subscribe on the podcast app of your choice. And remember, the ADA Shop Talk podcast is brought to you by BlueDag. Check out BlueDag's transition plan builder and inspection suite over at BlueDag.com. Got some great solutions for you Title II entities out there. We got some enhancements coming up that I think you really enjoy. But yeah, I hope you're enjoying these shows every Wednesday. And send in your questions and topic ideas. I'd love to hear from you. See if what you're digging, what you're not digging. If you're tired of me talking and want more interviews, I do have some great interviews coming up for you. But yeah, a new show every Wednesday for you in all things ADA. Working on some great guests and great topics. But I'd love to hear from you over at my email if you would like, or at the ADA Shop Talk community at adashoptalk.com. You can get in there for free. We got a lot of great stuff happening in there. You can private message me there or just shoot me an email at pklein@bluedag.com. I'd love to hear from you, hear from any topics you might want or, you know, anything kind of that's on your mind and so forth. And maybe we can riff on it here and break it down and talk about it. If I don't know, I'll find somebody that does. That's the beautiful thing about this whole realm of the ADA. There's always somebody out there that knows more or has the background. And we love finding those people and bringing them on here. So got some great guests and topics for you coming up shortly. But for many of you, this today's topic is kind of like taxes. You know, it's like, I know what it is, but I really don't understand it. I know I have to pay all this money, but I don't really know why. I know it's in the tax code and we have to do it every year. And program access and readily achievable barrier removal are two ADA topics that are often misunderstood. And so today's show is understanding program access versus readily achievable barrier removal. And so I love talking about both of these because, I don't know, it makes sense. You've been teaching this stuff for a while and helping clients on both sides of the spectrum and it, you know, it kind of makes sense to me. So hopefully I can explain it in a way that will help you. If not, maybe I'll spur some interest or say something that will spark your understanding and get you on a path to better understanding it. But in order to understand the difference between program access versus readily achievable barrier removal, we have to start with what is a Title II entity versus a Title III entity. Okay. So Title II, as you all know, most of you are probably ADA experts or close to it or understand it. There's five titles of the ADA, Title I through five. Title I being employment. You know, you can't discriminate for a lot of different things in employment practices. That's under Title I. You can't fire someone if they break their leg, you know, that kind of stuff. That's all handled under Title I. And then Title II is state and local government. Okay. So when the ADA came into place in the early 90s, it had a new component for Title II entities that wasn't there before, unless they were getting some kind of federal funding. So up until the enactment of the ADA in 1991, you know, state and local governments and also private entities just pretty much could ignore people with disabilities. It was the forgotten protected class, if you will, from the civil rights movement, at least in the private side. You know, definitely was covered under federal, 504, the Rehabilitation Act, federal facilities, post offices, DOT. All those things had components of accessibility, but there wasn't anything for state and local government. So if state and local government didn't you know, have federal funding or any programs associated with the feds, they could pretty much do what they wanted. That all changed in the early 90s. And so a Title II entity is state and local government. So cities, counties, could be state transportation districts, could be state courthouses, city jails and city hall, rec centers, anything providing those services, those public services, if you will. And those are all covered under what we call Title II of the ADA, or better known as 28 CFR Part 35. So that's 28 Code of Federal Regulations Part 35. So you know you're dealing with a Title II entity or topic if it has the Part 35 quoted in the section of the law, of the regulation, I should say. Conversely, a Title III entity is a private public accommodation. So those are your movie theaters and hotels and Starbucks and things like that. Everything pretty much other than a commercial facility. So commercial facilities aren't directly covered under RABAR, but they are covered under portions of the ADA. They're just not, they don't, the readily achievable barrier removal component doesn't apply to it. But for all intents and purposes, all of your private hotels, coffee shops, restaurants, dry cleaning, you know, all of those private mom and pop businesses, as well as, you know, Fortune 500, Denny's, you name it. I'm trying to think of PF Chang's. That's what I was trying to think of. I think it's on my mind. I might be hungry, but those are all Title III entities, and they're covered under 28 CFR Part 36 of the ADA. So the Americans with Disabilities Act law that was adopted by Congress 1990, and then it got codified or put into the Code of Federal Regulations in 28 CFR Part 36. So 35 is Title II, 36 is Title III. Now, under the ADA, all Title II entities have to make their programs, services, and activities accessible to people with disabilities. So this is the big difference, because most people start when it's a city or a new ADA coordinator and they're trying to look at their ADA compliance, they're saying, okay, how do we attack all these barriers? Okay, we got ramps missing. We have parking stalls that don't comply, handrails up in the stairs, doors and everything. And they immediately start diving into barrier removal and mitigation and thinking construction and how do we alter all this? Well, that may or may not be the case. Before you even go down that path, a better understanding of this program, services, and activities is important, because nothing in the ADA requires you to remodel all of your facilities and buildings. The ADA recognizes that a lot of state and local governments had facilities that have been around, you know, since the inception of the country, in the 1700s. So to make them go back and tear down the building and put ramps in and grab bars and everything, it's got a built-in component to help mitigate that. And that is, it's not so much about the barriers, it's about making the program, the service, or the activity itself accessible. So in a nutshell, what that means is you don't necessarily have to remove barriers. You can move it. You can move the program or service. You can get rid of it. That's not very popular politically, but you can cease to provide that program or service. not always a popular subject with politicians and people who rely on those services. But if it's an underutilized program or service, there's nothing that says you have to do it. I remember one of the cities I lived in California got rid of their rec department years ago. I forget. I mean, it was in the, I think it was in the 90s, late 80s or 90s. They just got rid of it. And okay, so in that case, they don't have to go in and make their, rec facility. They don't have to put ramps in and upgrade everything, because they're not offering programs and services there anymore. They shut it down and it was chained up and who knows what happened to it. But my point is, because they're no longer offering that program or service, they don't have to go in and mitigate that building. There could be thousands of barriers there, but if they don't have a program or service in there, then they don't have an obligation to remove barriers or make the program or service accessible. Another option for state and local governments is to move the program to an accessible location. So you may, the one I like to use is let's say you have a city hall, an old city hall, you know, it was built in the 1800s or 1700s, has stairs going up. It's an old, you know, marble gray, you know, typical one you might find in, you know, mid-city USA. And it doesn't have any, you know, accessible ramp going into it or anything like that, but they have the city clerk's office in there, maybe the mayor's office or something like that. Or a satellite office, but they have a brand new city hall over by the new fire department that has the exact same services and programs. And it's a new building. It was just built, let's say, in the last 10 years. It's fully accessible. So they don't have to tear down and remodel the old, you know, 1700, 1800 built city hall, because the same programs and services are offered and available at an accessible location over at the new you know, city administrative center or the city fire department or whatever. And so you can be creative in your compliance efforts as a Title II entity in doing those kinds of mitigation efforts and, you know, looking at it holistically from a program access and services and activities, view, as opposed to construction and barriers. And a lot of you public works ADA coordinators and building inspectors and, you know, construction people go immediately into that built environment. How do we mow this thing over and rebuild it to make it comply, you know, instead of looking at that flexibility that the entity has in moving the program, relocating it, or making it accessible. So it comes down to three things. Title II entities have to make their programs, services, and activities accessible, period. They have three options. They can make it accessible, i.e. remodel it. They can get rid of it, or they can relocate it to an accessible location. It's really that simple. It's those three options. They can remodel it to make it accessible. They can get rid of it, or they can relocate it to an accessible location so that the program is accessible. So that's kind of Title II in a nutshell, and there's no grandfathering in, there's no, you know, well, you know, it was built before the ADA. So no, Title II entities have to make their program, services, and activities accessible. And where it's really challenging for most Title II entities is in corrections, because as you know, corrections with the levels, the pods, you know, you have the really bad guys and then the really, really bad guys, you know, and then, you know, and then mixing in inmate population with people with disabilities at those different levels and having different services at the correction facility, you know, whether it be education or drug rehab or family counseling, whatever it may be, you know, all of those have to be accessible. And those are all programs within a program, if you will. And you don't just go into a, you know, a level 4 pod and just move walls around. You know, there's security and there's some major issues there that really have to be considered. And so anyway, having an effective program in place to accommodate people with disabilities and move them to maybe a lesser facility that has those same programs and services, as opposed to putting them in the old, you know, Alcatraz, you know, dilapidated, non-compliant jail. Maybe you move them over to a lighter one and somehow, you know, you can isolate them from the population depending on their level and everything. I mean, it gets very deep, but my point is there's that flexibility there in making the program and accommodating, very much like Title I in the ADA, where you make an accommodation for people with disabilities. It's the same kind of thing with your state and local government. Now let's talk about Title III, hotels, Target, Walmart, P.F. Chang's, McDonald's. Those are all public accommodations. They have an obligation to remove all readily achievable barriers. Okay. And so there's no grandfathering in, and there's a little more flexibility in the sense that you don't necessarily have to make your facility fully compliant if it's not readily achievable to do so, meaning easily accomplishable without much difficulty or expense. Well, that's very vague. And it is on purpose, because what's easily and accomplishable without much difficulty and expense is very much different for a mom and pop shop that's barely making their $1,000 a month rent, about ready to close down, versus Apple or Starbucks, who owns that same coffee shop. Okay. So if you kind of look at it from those two extremes, it kind of demonstrates the concept of readily achievable, meaning that if you have a mom and pop shop that's down on Main Street, that's, you know, barely making their $1,000 a month rent, they're in an old, you know, Victorian, hotel, I'm not hotel, you know, old house that was converted into a coffee shop, you know, down on Main Street, you know, one of those little boutique kind of coffee shops where everybody goes with their laptop, you know, something you might see in Seattle or, you know, some hipster town, you know, the cool place to go have coffee instead of at Starbucks. Well, you go in there and, you know, there's not one iota of accessibility. Well, you know, the building was built in the 1800s, coffee shop's been there, you know, since the 70s, you know, and then all of a sudden this ADA thing comes along. Well, the mom and pop since 1990 have had an obligation to remove all readily achievable barrier removal. So that means they should have in the early 90s looked at their building and removed any barriers that were easy to do under the 91 standards. And then now that we're in the 2010 standards, they would need to look under the 2010 to see if there was anything, you know, that changed and they needed to do as well. And they, you know, if they're barely making rent, you know, a $5,000 ramp in their world is a big expense. So, you know, maybe they have, you know, they need a ramp, maybe the door's too narrow, maybe their counter is too high. All those are barriers, but there's some things that they could do in the meantime, such as, you know, putting a doorbell or a phone number at the curb that says, hey, we'll do curbside service. Just call this number or ring this bell. We'll bring the menu out to you and serve you here. That's something that's allowed under the ADA as a temporary accommodation for the business until they can afford it. And then what they should do is be putting a portion of their profits away in an ADA mitigation fund. You know, we recommend with our clients to do that during tax time, is put a little bit of their maintenance budget away for barrier removal. And so at some point that $5,000 ramp will become readily achievable for that mom and pop, because they're going to, you know, put a couple $100 a month away. You know, maybe they do a sign, maybe they do the counter or lever hardware or something like that. They do what they can do, as profits allowed. And sometimes that obligation increases with when profits are up and goes down when the economy is down and they're not doing well. And so it can stretch it out. And so having that plan in place, a barrier removal plan, and looking at it each year and being conscious of it, puts them in a very defensible position if they're ever sued or a complaint is filed against them. Because what the ADA litigants do, especially out in California, New York, and in Florida, is they rely on many of these mom and pops not doing anything. They haven't even put the $6 sticker in for 30 years. So then by the time they get in front of the judge's hands are tied. They're like, what do you mean? This law's been around for 30 years. You haven't even, you couldn't afford a $6 sticker in the last 30 years. So oftentimes they just have to rule in even if the, litigant is, just out to, you know, just to sue six dry cleaners in one day to try to get a settlement. Their hands are tied because the business owner hasn't actually done anything. And so it just doesn't help them out. So embarking on a barrier removal plan and that mom and pop's obligation, you can see, is very difficult in that case. But let's take that same coffee shop now and say they, mom and pop, decide to retire. They've had that shop since the 70s and now Starbucks moves in. What's their level of obligation? Think about that. That's a multi-billion dollar company. They come in, that $5,000 ramp and the counter all of a sudden is seriously, it's really hard to argue that they couldn't afford to change the ramp out. I mean, if Starbucks claims they can't afford a $5,000 ramp, then, that's just, that's just not not going to happen, if you get my point. You know, it's very readily achievable in their case. And so their obligation immediately goes up as soon as they acquire the property. And so that's kind of the different extremes. And so those Title III entities must remove readily achievable barriers that are easily accomplishable without much difficulty or expense. And it really comes down to a case-by-case basis and the cost in relation to the entity that owns it. And there's all levels between Starbucks and Apple, or Walmart versus, you know, a mom and pop, you know, oil shop, or you know, used car, you know, shop, those kind of things. I mean, those are all different levels, and that's why it's very ambiguous, if you will, and misunderstood, because there's no one size fits all. They purposely allowed it to be scalable based on the entity or the owner, and the obligation goes up with the resources. And so, you know, I've worked with a lot of business owners that I tell them, hey, you know, there's some easy things you could do here, some signage, some striping, fix your parking. And I lay it out to them real easy, and they're like, nah, I'll just take my chance. And that's where the advocates that are like, hey, you know, why aren't we getting more access? The business owners aren't doing anything. And I've seen that side of it. Then I've seen the other side where businesses have, you know, tried to do the right thing. They've remodeled, they've got all their permits, tried to make it as best they could. And then one of the drive-by or serial litigants come by, you know, has been to their 13th dry cleaning shop in the same day, sending letters out to try to get a, you know, a settlement. And, you know, I've seen that side of it too. And so it's unfortunate on both sides, because you'd think that people would just do the right thing. You know, when a high frequency litigant, I think that's the politically correct term, a high frequency litigant, comes through town, it's amazing how much more the businesses are, eager to, they've heard about so-and-so on the other side of town, and their other buddy on the other side of town got hit with a lawsuit. And then now when I come in and give them a report, they're like, oh yeah, okay, we'll do that. And it's like, it's high priority, because there's a reality to not being compliant. And so you can argue the whole lawsuit game and all that kind of stuff, but the reality is businesses should embark on their readily achievable barrier removal and do what they can do, have a plan in place. It's not that hard. It's like taxes. It's a pain. But the other thing is, that's the biggest thing, is you increase the marketability of your business. You know, I forget the status, the report that was out. It was something like the discretionary income of people with disability is twice or three times of the teenage market. I think it was a 2018 study. I should find that one of these days. I used to have it memorized, but essentially, by making your business more accessible, nice parking stall, nice accessible route to get into your dry cleaning business, people with disabilities are going to look, hey, that business is friendly to people with disabilities. I want to do business with them. I'm going to go spend my money with them, because they go down the street, there's two others that are, you know, have steps. You know, it's too hard to get in. They're going to go to your competitor. And so there's a financial gain by making your business more accessible, because it really opens up the market to even more customers. And it's just the right thing to do. And it just makes a lot of sense. And so when I've explained that to business owners, sometimes the light bulb comes on, and we can make some great progress there. But that's the biggest thing is between Title III and Title II. And the other thing I want to point out too is that the difference between Title II and Title III, also, if you consider, is that you can't in a program services and activities condition. So city, state, county, government, you can't go somewhere else to get your dog license. You can't go somewhere else to get a driver's license or pay your taxes. You can only go to the county tax collector to pay your tax. You can't say, you know what, your tax collection counter is not accessible, I'm going to go over here to the other county and pay them over here. Whereas in the Title III world, if the coffee shop that you normally go to isn't accessible, you can go to Starbucks or you can go over to Pete's. You know, you have options in the Title III land versus Title II. You don't. you can't, you know, you don't have that ability to file a building permit in another city or county because that's your jurisdiction with your taxes, your driver's license. You get my point. You can't go to another state to get your driver's license renewed. You have to go to that state facility. And so that's why there's a higher level of obligation under Title II to make your programs, services, and activities. If they're not accessible, make them accessible. If you can't make them accessible, move them to an accessible location. If you can't move them to an accessible location, then get rid of it. And so administrators, ADA coordinators, politicians don't like to hear that, but that's the reality of the ADA. And then when that is tied to federal funding and DOT and DOJ looking at your Title II transition plan and whether you've embarked on that and whether you have all your T's crossed and your I's dotted to make sure, you know, you're in compliance to continue to receive those federal grants and things like that. So it's super important to have that in place and have a living transition plan and not just a binder where you throw it on back when I worked for the city, you know, it was always in the public works department in the basement on the top of some file cabinet with about 2 pounds of dust on it, you know, and that's where BlueDag really shines with our new transition plan builder because it digitizes that living transition plan. So no matter who comes in afterwards or staff changes or politicians change, you have that repository where everything's tracked and continues to go with whoever's with the entity. So really think it's the greatest way to go and making your facility. Consultants come and go, politicians come and go, staff come and go. But the last thing you want is an old dusty binder that nobody understands. If you have that digitized in a format where it's much like QuickBooks or any kind of tracking system, it's easy to understand and someone else can pick up the ball and keep it going is the best way. So, but if you ever do want to get a demo for BlueDag, let me know. You can email me at pklein@bluedag.com and we can get the team to do a demo for you. And if you have any questions on the difference between program access and readily achievable barrier removal or anything I've said here, or you want some backup on that, you know, email me, or better yet, just join the ADA Shop Talk community because I'd love to converse with you there. You can private message me. I go live in there sometimes. And so all that kind of stuff is all available to you there. So yeah, please join me for the ADA Shop Talk community at adashoptalk.com. Again, email me at pklein@bluedag.com if you'd like. And hey, this month's webinar, you're hearing it here first, I don't think it's been announced yet, is going to be ADA awareness for Title II entities and agencies. ADA awareness for Title II entities and agencies. I got a great session. I've done this session before. I think you'll find it super useful. If you're a ADA coordinator or a Title II entity, I think you'll really enjoy that session. It's March 21st, 2024, and it's from 11 a.m. to 12 p.m. Pacific time with myself and Victor Felix. And we'd love to have you join us there. It is free and you can get some CEUs. And so again, that's ADA awareness for Title II entities and agencies, March 21st, 2024. And if you haven't already subscribed to the ADA Shop Talk podcast, please subscribe on your favorite podcast player, such as iTunes, Spotify, and iHeartRadio. And hey, get out there and rock your ADA reference. Your reference. Get out there and rock your ADA efforts. And remember, let's all work together to create a world where everyone has the opportunity to thrive. My name is Paul Klein. Thank you so much for being here. Take care until next week. And have a great rest of your week.